Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Informal Paranormal. I'm John Rossi, and I'm here tonight with Michael Jones.
Hey, everybody.
Hey,
hey guys.
So, tonight we have another big night. We've got a remote viewing on you tonight.
Oh, yeah. I had a couple of sessions I did this afternoon, and of course, we actually have three posted there. I accidentally saw one of the pictures, so we had to throw it out, and we just left that for the public to play with also. So, but yeah, I kind of feel good about the two remote viewing sessions I did.
Good.
Yeah.
Any thoughts you want to share with us?
Well, I'll tell you something ironic, that and this has something to do with the other subject we're going to be talking about tonight. On the actual forum thread, you know, you posted where I was not going to be doing certain coordinates, but I'm doing these others. Well, on the procedure form that I was using, I wrote down the wrong numbers, but my intent was the third target, which I've seen the other numbers in the picture, but it had nothing to do with what I came up with. So, you know, this is going to be kind of interesting because it might actually point to more of, in you know, where you're focusing your intent to instead of it actually having anything to do with the numbers. And the numbers may just, you know, be a supplemental thing, kind of like training wheels.
Okay, so it could just be a mechanism to help you to just focus your psychic ability or whatever, however you want to name the remote viewing.
Pretty much, you know, and it would make a lot of sense because when I don't know if you remember back in the 90s when they were getting a lot of publicity, they would talk about remote viewing where people were lost or, you know, the finding the Russian submarine, stuff like that, and they didn't actually have coordinates they were using per se as much as a subject, you know, where they were focusing their intent on a subject to find out or, you know, a certain geographical location or whatever. So, you know, I may have just... It may just step me up another level, but we won't find out until we actually reveal the third one. So we'll have to see about that.
Okay, well, tonight we did it a little bit differently. We didn't end up with a double blind because I actually picked all three of the targets this time because I was running my own little experiment, and it'll become real obvious what it is as we do the reveal. But I was just curious about a certain aspect, and I'll go into more detail as we get there. But
and I'm going to go ahead and post in the chat room the link to take you to the forum thread where we're going to be posting the information.
All right,
so,
good.
Was there any rhyme or reason to how you were choosing the pictures, or was it just kind of a random process for yourself?
Oh, no, I very specifically chose one of the targets, and you'll see why. We'll go ahead and let's go ahead and do that one first. All right.
What the first target itself?
Yeah. You want to go ahead and post what you?
Well, that's the one I can't do. Remember, that's the picture that I saw.
Okay. Well, actually,
which one would it be?
Let's go to number 777-1313.
Okay, hang on a second. I'll go ahead and post my results first. And let's see here. 777-1313. Okay.
Hey, Catherine, we'll get to that one, the one that Mike can't do in just a minute, okay? And you certainly could go ahead and type in what you think you got for target. Target number 777-1313.
Yeah, and I've got it posted right now.
All right, let's go take a look at that. Remember, everyone, you need to refresh your page, right?
Yes, and it's going to be about the third reply down in that thread that I posted the link on. Now, I'm not sure why I was coming up with what I came up with, and I'm not sure that the picture is going to be even anywhere close to this. So,
okay, so you want to just tell us about your diagram here?
Well, I mean, there's not much. I mean, it's pretty self-explanatory. I don't know that this is a train or cars or what this is. You know, I mean, it's pretty. The little circles you see inside the boxes would represent people. But I'm not too sure what the circle is behind it.
Uh-huh.
I'm thinking the peak that you see in the upper left hand is probably a tree. The square boxes would be just structures. I'm thinking that this may be indoors. I'm not sure, like a subway or something of this.
Hmm. Okay. All right, so do you want me to go ahead and give me a second while I upload the actual target. Okay. And, Mike, do you want me to just go ahead and put it side by side on your posting there?
Yes.
Okay.
You just modify that third post.
Yeah.
And like I said, you know, the first, like I was telling John, the first one just kind of felt like a warm-up session, but the second one felt a lot more solid that I did. Does this have historical significance, John?
It has significance at a lot of different levels.
Okay.
Okay. And you'll see that in a minute. Sorry, I'm still. There we go.
Okay. Just let us know when to refresh.
Okay, I think it should be there.
Ha! How funny.
So, you want to tell everyone what that is, Mike?
That's my partner John Rossi's logo for his team.
And do you want to tell the people who designed that logo?
I did that. That's interesting.
So, I thought it was interesting some of your word descriptors. You know, you were talking about enclosed. The other thing is I think it's interesting that you had three, like, vehicle things, but three predominant things in the center.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were identifying this larger circle thing.
Mm-hmm.
You had enclosed, crowded, stuffed people. So I don't know. You know, the reason I chose that is I was trying to see if there would be any difference in your ability to view something that you had actually had a hand in creating.
Huh.
I was just wondering if there would have been, you know, that connection that we talk about would even be more enhanced when it was something that, you know, that we created.
That's interesting. Huh.
So based on the feelings you had and stuff like that, I mean, what do you think between your drawing and that?
Oh, that's far off. But, you know, the thing, like I said, is that first one was kind of like a warm-up. It didn't feel as tight.
Okay.
It was just, you know, one of those loose kind of things.
Okay. So Catherine said, see, I knew I was way off. Well.
I had a fighter pilot, World War One, about to crash. I saw him in the cockpit.
Well, you know, actually, I believe that's what the entity was. No, I'm just kidding. But, okay, let's look at the next one. Okay, Mike?
Okay, which one do you want to do, the third one?
Yeah, let's go to the third, or well, it would be the second one that you had done.
Okay, hang on a second, and I'll get it posted up. Let's see, that is 8899-1122. Okay, it's up. If everybody wants to refresh your page, that's going to be the fifth reply down on that page. And if you look at it, what I was coming up with was like a forest scene, river, people walking along a bank kind of deal.
All right. Let me go ahead and post up the actual target photo then, okay?
All right.
So, while I'm doing that, Mike, why don't you go ahead and, you know, talk about anything else that you have related to these remote viewing sessions that you've had today?
Well, you know, the thing of it is I'm still trying to, because I've had good hits, and I want to do enough of these to where I want to see if it's going to break 50-50. Is the main thing I'm looking at, which, because if it's above percentage chance that I'm still hitting, you know, good, I'm getting my targets and all, then I'm going to go ahead and proceed to the second level of this training course, but I don't really feel comfortable until I get to the stage to where I can actually start identifying these locations better. And that's, you know, that's really my own preference. It's kind of like, you know, you don't... anytime you practice anything, you want to get your skill level up to a certain stage where you're totally comfortable with it, and it's just almost like second nature, and that's really what I'm trying to do. So, you know, I'm going to have hit and misses, and I realize that. And like with the first reading, when I started that, it was kind of like I haven't done a remote viewing session all week since last time. And, you know, in some ways I should have went ahead and done that. And for my own good, you know, just to keep the practice in. But what I did is I gave myself about a 6-hour ahead of time start when I did these. These take about 40 minutes on the average to do. And that way you're not feeling rushed. And this time what I changed is I tried to let, you know, they tell you not to close your eyes while you're doing the drawings. I tried to let the imagery show up on the page while I was drawing it. And that way, you know, to see what would happen. And then that's one thing I did change in the process. Kind of like a ghost image starts showing up on the page and then you just kind of do a tracing of it.
Okay. Well, let me repost this because it didn't go up there. Hold on one second.
Mm-hmm. And so I heard you were reading Miss Bellinger's book.
I am. We'll be talking about Michelle Bellinger's book, The Ghost Hunter Survival Guide, in just a few minutes. Anyway, Let's do this one more time. So, Mike, what's the next step in this training that you're doing for your remote viewing?
What the next step's going to be is taking away the training wheels, essentially. They get rid of the entire worksheets, and all you're left with is a blank page where you scribble your ideogram down, and then you start doing your remote viewing session on a blank piece of paper, and you just go from there. I just reviewed the very beginning of the second area, and that's what they were talking about getting into, and I didn't feel comfortable enough just to jump off into it yet. And essentially what he's doing is he's trying to get you, I guess, since he showed you the protocol of how to get this access this information, he's expecting you now to drop the training wheels now that you understand the process and then be able to just to apply it to a blank piece of paper instead of making all your lists and having everything itemized. Because what he's essentially doing is he's taking it from an analytical end on the paper, and now when the training wheels are removed, it starts becoming more and more on a subconscious level that you're dumping straight to the paper. So that's pretty interesting. Did you get it posted?
I just got a message from Internet Explorer telling me I need to retry, so I just hit that again. So we're having some power issues here tonight. We've got lights flickering and stuff like that, and the internet's been being kind of buggy. So
this file looks like it just might have taken a dump on it. Oh, okay. Yeah, email it to Doug real quick. That's the problem. It's too big.
All right.
Yeah. So, anyway, I think the whole topic line's down now. So what I'm going to do is, let's see if I can get it to take again. Let's see.
Okay, we're sending this to Bug as we speak.
And what I'm going to do now is I'm going to start a new post because that one has crashed on us.
All right. While we're doing that, let's get on to something else, and we'll pick that up as soon as we can. Tonight, one of the topics that we wanted to talk about was Michelle Bellinger's most recent book, The Ghost Hunter's Survival Guide, Protection Techniques for Encounters with the Paranormal. And then on the back of the book, it says, Ghosts Can't Hurt Us, Right? Well, let me tell you what. I was pleasantly surprised by this book. To be honest, I thought it was going to be horrible and that there'd be a lot of stuff to poke your finger at. And the reality is it was well written, well thought out, and
pretty grounded, wasn't it, from what you were telling me?
Yeah, absolutely. There was all kinds of interesting things. But first of all, for those of you that don't know who Michelle Bellinger is, she's one of the psychics that regularly appears on Paranormal State. Based on that television show, I didn't necessarily have high expectations for the book because, for those of you that watch the show, it's pretty much almost every time they go somewhere, they're battling a demon or a malicious entity or some real high drama type situation. But her book is anything but that. It's very well thought out. It's very measured. Tonight I'd like to just talk about some different aspects of the book that just really, struck a really struck me as being, very meaningful. One of the things that she talks about is the visual impact of an investigation site. And, that's really an important thing because, how many times have you heard someone say, oh, that place looks like it's haunted or that place looks like it should be haunted? Well, having those preconceived notions, affects how we perceive that environment. So it's one of the things that, she cautions, people to be aware of, and whether that's the resident that lives there or the investigator going to the house, is that just because something looks a certain way doesn't necessarily mean it is. And if you end up going in there with like a preconceived notion, then most likely you're going to find whatever you think you're going to find. So, I thought that was, absolutely dead on, meaningful bit of advice.
Well, and it goes back to what we've always talked about, how much people's belief systems affect their perception. It really does. It's absolutely 100% of what they're experiencing is how they believe.
Yep, absolutely. Now, one of the things that, she talks about in the book is that she's saying, and this is a quote, "Language has power, and every word we use speaks to us on an unconscious level, building profound meaning upon everything that each word symbolizes." And, that's absolutely true because from a psychological standpoint, we know that words have power, and words have various degrees of power for people, and they have various degrees of meaning. Like, for instance, when I was growing up, my father, who was rather a hard man to get along with, basically always referred to me and my brother as stupid dummy. Now, the problem with that is we never really knew who he was talking about because, it was never like stupid dummy one and stupid dummy two. It was just, rarely did we ever get called by our regular names. Well, to this day, I'd rather be called an SOB or something else than a stupid dummy. Because for me, the word stupid dummy has a power associated with it. And in this case, it's a negative power. It's a negative association. But, most people would say, well, stupid dummy, that's not that big a deal being called that. But for me, it's a huge deal.
So you're saying it's contextual, depending on who it is.
Well, I'm saying that we as humans assign value to words, and those words, because of the value that we assign to them, become very powerful, and it affects us directly. It elicits emotions. A word that elicits an emotion from you, Mike, in my mind, is rather a powerful word.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. And, that'd be the same for me. Anytime I hear the word gray, it sends a twinge down my back. And my back history and why that is.
Right,
so,
absolutely.
So I understand where you're coming from on that. There's certain words that have both emotional content and... it goes into a psychic level, literally, or I should say a psyche level, where it hurts or it feels good or, whatever for whoever.
So. Right. So, it's amazing that a simple word can do that to a person. It can make them feel great. It can make them feel horrible. So one of the things that she's saying in her book is that since words have power, we need to be, careful how we use them. And, so like when we talk to clients, We need to be thoughtful about what we say. The flip side to that is these same words for each of us has a certain level of power. So we're able to access our own internal strengths, if you will, by use of certain words. So anyway, it's a reoccurring theme. It's something to keep in mind. When she's writing the book, she's done it in a really unique and entertaining way. She's doing an investigation with another investigator. It's the first time this other psychic investigator has been on a case, and they're actually investigating a house where there's a haunting occurring, and the person that's in this house is an untrained psychic. Okay? So we're talking about a lot of different energies going on here. But in the course of the investigation, she has it broken down to, like, you know, the key elements of the investigation. And at each point, she will talk about a concept and a training method associated with that concept. And when she's telling the story, like in the first person, you have this kind of middle ground of someone who's somewhat spiritual, somewhat scientific, somewhat maybe religious, but someone that's kind of right in the middle in terms of belief systems. But she makes sure that at each point in the book that she also gives the perspective from someone who isn't religious, who is investigating strictly from the scientific end of things. So if they don't see it, hear it, experience it through their equipment, it's not a piece of evidence they're necessarily going to consider. Or it's not a piece of evidence that they're going to consider very much. Then on the opposite side, there'll be explanations from a religious standpoint in terms of how someone who's religious may experience that event and the things that they can do within the context of their belief system to be effective in that particular situation. One of the things that she talks about early on is the concept of basic grounding and centering. And she has a real cool exercise that she does where basically she teaches people how to get focused. Okay. Now, what I thought was really interesting about this, and Doug Prawley has done something very similar to this in his work either as a life coach or as a hypnotist, and that's getting a person to, like, slow down their mind and to get focused on whatever they have identified as the thing that they need to do at a certain period of time, whether that's to meditate and relax or to focus on, well, whatever they need to focus on. But she goes through a series of steps that basically almost, I don't want to say forces, but it guides the person into this, like, calmed and centered place. Okay.
So in other words, it's almost like the same techniques that they use in meditation and everything to get your mind to quieten itself down. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. And I guess that's why this book just, like, it was so meaningful to me in so many different ways, because so much of what she's saying is actually based on psychological theory. And is based on, you know, you've been in the martial arts.
Yeah.
That whole orientation of getting focused and getting centered,
mm-hmm.
very similar. So it seems like, again, we're again at that place where there's overlap, if you will, in terms of people getting themselves in a certain mindset so they're able to access you know, their other abilities.
Okay. Okay.
All right.
So it's what. So essentially, you're taking the emotional content out of this situation at the beginning.
Well, I don't know if you'd say it's taking the emotional content out, because basically what they're trying to have you do is, like, when you're in a situation where you're trying to get grounded and centered, in this context, let's say you go into a haunted location.
Yeah.
And even if you're totally insensitive and you don't see or experience spirits, sometimes there's an uncomfortable energy about a place, you know? You just don't like the vibe. Okay? Well, she suggests that there's residual energies. I'm not talking about something that's, you know, residual haunting. I'm just saying that a lot of times places have leftover energy. And basically, within her concept of understanding how this all works, this leftover energy essentially spoils. Okay?
Okay.
And becomes, well, for lack of a better word, rancid. And so you got all this rancid energy hanging around. So, like, when someone walks into the room, they end up becoming somewhat overwhelmed by it. So, you know, what they do is, you know, they go through these exercises that she's talking about, and basically you get rid of that type of energy. And a lot of times what happens for people that are sensitive and stuff is, because this energy is uncomfortable, then they start, you know, thinking, oh, I'm under a psychic attack, or, you know, there's something evil here. And so, you know, you go outside, you go through this ritual, if you will, of getting centered and grounded and casting this stuff off, getting your head squared back to where it needs to be. Mm-hmm. So you're able to be effective in your investigation.
Okay.
Now, one of the things that, you know, in the book, I mean, there's just so many things, and I don't want to, like, give away the whole book and stuff like that, because that wouldn't be fair to her. But I'll tell you how impressed I am with this book. I'm going to have all the people on the Shenandoah Shadows team make it mandatory that they read this book. I think it's that well written. The other kind of litmus test on how good it was and stuff like that is Brian Parsons, our director of research at Paranexus. Now, Brian can get kind of cranky when people write books and they're crap. And he has no problem basically, you know, laying into them and in a way that's appropriate, just in terms of, like, you know, from an analytical standpoint, you know, he'll identify all the problems and stuff like that.
Right.
Well, he actually liked this book very much and thought that it was very well thought out, well reasoned, very centered. And he actually had an opportunity to investigate with Michelle Bellinger, I guess, about a year ago. And, you know, to be honest, he kind of had the same impression I did based on the television show, that he wasn't thinking that was going to be a whole lot of fun.
Right.
But he said that once they were, like, in private and no longer, you know, talking to the audience and stuff like that, that she was very intelligent. She really solicited other people's opinions in terms of their, you know, their beliefs and how they viewed something. And her whole style of investigating was very, very professional. Hmm. So, you know, again, you know, clearly it's one of these things, you know, I had, based on watching television, an idea of who this person was all about and was absolutely wrong, you know.
Right. Well, I want to make a comment about that. A lot of people don't make the connection. I've done video editing, and I'm here to tell you, I can probably take 30 minutes of an interview, and I can chop it up to the point where I can make somebody appear to say whatever I want them to say. I mean, plain and simple. So if the agenda, like, for say, for instance, Paranormal State, was wanting to present in the light of, let's say she's talking about a demon, okay, she might have been having a conversation with people's belief systems, and if they believe in demons, we need to treat it this way. Well, they didn't take that context, the actual conversation in context in all likelihood, they chopped it to where it sounded like she was talking about there was a demon in the house, right? Because that's the episode I saw. And, you know, that's one of those things, you know, where you have to realize reality TV is going to present it how they want to present it. It really does not even get close to who the real those people really are. You know, it's just how they want to present the show to everyone. So, and this book evidently is a telltale sign of how this person really is as compared to the show.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to meet her, you know, at this point, and I'd love to go on an investigation with her. When she was describing how she feels on investigations and describing a lot of events, she was using the exact words that I use when I'm trying to relate my feelings and my experiences on an event. And for me, that was huge because it was very validating for my own personal experiences and my own personal beliefs. One of the things that, you know, she talks about at one point is, you know, people go into a certain setting and they get weirded out. And are you getting weirded out because it's a creepy place, or are you getting weirded out because there's actually something in there? Okay. So one of the things that she has is she has some criteria so people can kind of analyze what's going on with themselves.
Right.
And so here's what she's got, this like small list that she uses to determine if she's being affected by residual energies at a haunting. The first thing that she looks for is whether or not she's feeling unusual or distracted. Two, she looks at experiencing strong emotions that seem to come from nowhere. Three, feeling lightheaded or dizzy with no physical explanation. Four, oppressive feelings or a sense of pressure in your head. And five, headache or nausea with no physical explanation. Now, these are what she uses to filter out, if you will, just being creeped out by a creepy location. Okay? That whole visual, those visual cues that like Hollywood has instilled into us.
Uh-huh.
You know, it looks this way, the wind's blowing, it's dark, whatever. So this is the stuff that she's looking at. And so, like, if this checklist, if she's starting to check, you know, the boxes, so to speak, then she's going to be looking at that there's some type of energy that's affecting her.
Huh. Now, I've actually experienced the, not the lightheadedness, but I could actually tell when there was an atmospheric change. And I don't mean necessarily barometer or a temperature thing, but I mean it actually felt like there was electricity in the air almost. My skin felt prickly. It was the best way I can describe it. You know, and that was up when I was at the Boonville Sanatorium, and that was really an interesting experience. It was just like a big wall of energy that I walked into, and that's the only way I could actually describe what it felt like.
I understand what you're saying. And throughout the book, I mean, basically, she's an energy worker.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's, you know, approaching everything kind of from, you know, that starting point, if you will.
Uh-huh.
And she talks about the fact that living people give off energy, spirits give off energy. There are living people that can get into your space and literally affect you in a negative way.
Huh.
You know, some people will refer to that. You've heard people refer to like psychic vampires.
Right.
And things of that nature. And one of the things that, again, is an underlying theme throughout the book is the whole concept of personal boundaries. And as a therapist, I can tell you that's one of life's absolute truths. In terms of for someone to be a healthy individual, they have to have good boundaries, good, strong boundaries. And she essentially says exactly that as well. Now, you know, she's talking about kind of energy boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe like when I was telling people about personal boundaries. I was talking about establishing limits within relationships. But again, you know, certain people, I have met certain people that literally suck the life out of me. I don't know. I'm sure you have too.
Yeah, I've run across them.
It's not that they're doing anything overtly bad, but just simply being in their presence drains you.
Right.
And, you know, I never had an explanation for that. I mean, clearly this is a person that I would tend to avoid in terms of a social setting or something like that, just because literally it was unpleasant to be around them. Well, people like that that can drain our energy, well, she suggests that there's spirits that drain our energy as well, and that we need to have good, strong boundaries, and we need to protect ourselves using those boundaries. Okay?
Okay.
And she talks about basically creating shields. Okay, that's the word that she uses. And, you know, she talks about the basic one I'm sure that we've all heard about where, you know, you visualize, you know, being encompassed in this white light and nothing negative can, you know, no negative energy can penetrate that. It bounces off the light, you know, that type of thing.
Right.
And she's got exercises to help you visualize that whole process. Now,
well, I got a question. As far, you know, you did counseling work,
right?
And Doug's not here to really ask this question, but isn't that the same as when you're doing hypnosis or anything like that, that you're actually giving a thought, more or less a thought construct to produce that level of psychic result, in a sense? I mean, where it's actually putting a barrier, you're establishing a perimeter through a thought?
Well, I mean, okay, first of all, thoughts are powerful. You know what I mean? The concept of a thought and what a thought can do is huge. And basically, if you take the word and take thought out and put it into like your belief,
mm-hmm.
your belief, whatever your belief is powerful. You know, it's a source of energy for you. Okay? If you believe you can do something, then chances are you can do it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Conceptually. So this thought process enables us to accomplish the things that we need to accomplish in our lives. And, you know, she's taking it to a place where this same thought process allows us not to experience certain energies. It, you know, it allows us to essentially filter this out. And she's talking both in terms of other human energy that you wish not to deal with, as well as spirit energy.
Oh, okay. Very nice.
Okay.
So she's essentially using the same concept that hypnotists use and counselors use to teach self-empowerment.
Dude, you know what? It's pretty much all part of the same spectrum, and I think that ultimately it all gets you into the same place.
Okay, so it's a matter of semantics again.
Well, it's a matter of there's a number of paths to get to the final destination. And, you know, whether that path is through individual meditation or individual self-hypnosis, or it's through directed hypnosis, or whether it's through a religious ritual, it's all about you being able to achieve that higher state where you're able to access this part of your mind or this part of your consciousness that you're not normally not connected with.
Okay.
All right?
Yeah.
One of the things when she's writing, she calls it the skeptic's corner, and that's, you know, the hardcore scientist view of something. She said, shielding is all about boundaries, not just boundaries of psychic energy, but psychological boundaries as well. If a person feels vulnerable, they often unconsciously put themselves into situations where that vulnerability can be taken advantage of. Predators, human and otherwise, have an instinctive sense for weakness. By focusing on the steps of constructing a shield, you are telling your subconscious that you are not going to be victimized. And, you know, I think that is huge. You know?
Yeah.
So
that's, I mean, that sounds like that book's going to be really a great read. That's something I'm going to have to look into and actually invest in, because it sounds like she's essentially saying the same thing that, you know, the Paranexus Academy teaches, but in a psychic perspective.
There are so many things in this book that are consistent with what Paranexus is all about, because she continually is talking about empowering the individual. She's talking about not making them dependent on an investigator or making them dependent on a psychic. She's talking about creating their own power, which is, I mean, you know, if that's not what we're about, I don't know what we're about then.
Well, and you when we were talking earlier, you said the biggest point that you saw in there was not pushing your own belief systems onto another.
Absolutely. She thinks that, you know, basically that's like one of the very worst things. Right here's her quote. "In my opinion, one of the greatest wrongs one person can commit against another is to attempt to force a belief upon them." Now, that's huge. All right. We still have to get back to the last target posting. And I just want to end with something. At the very end of her book, she's basically creates a ghost hunter's manifesto. And I'll read this real quick, and then we'll switch gears again. "Respect the living and the dead. Follow the laws of the land. Leave a place in as good a state as you found it. Respect the belief systems of others. Present all psychic impressions with proper qualifiers. Do not take advantage of another's ignorance or fear. Communicate the difference between theory and fact. If you take clients, be honest, sincere, professional, and forthright. Never be afraid to admit when you're out of your depth. With these 9 simple rules in mind, and armed with both common courtesy and common sense, you can be a credit to the field of paranormal investigation." You know, it's like, it's so obvious, you know? So how come so few people are doing that?
What's amazing to me is just how much TV did not represent this woman in this light. You know?
Yep.
And then so everybody else is mimicking what they see her do on TV instead of actually, you know, doing the correct ways of investigating, or even just being a psychic in general and how to treat people, you know, because there's a lot of people waking up, I guess, you know, and learning that they've actually got some kind of skill and they don't know where to go to for good information. It sounds like this woman actually has some really good information.
Yep. Like I said, it's an amazing book. And for me, it was very validating, because so much of what she suggests we should be doing as ethical investigators and ethical psychics, for me, it was, I felt good realizing I was doing those things. You know, I was walking that walk. So, again, good book. Okay, Mike, there are some people that may be interested in the final target. So you want to
go
ahead and direct them?
Yeah, I'll post the link again. This is the 5th reply down. And I have a question. This was Jordan Springs, right?
Yeah, it was. How'd you know that?
I had a little person whisper in my ear a while ago through a chat box.
Okay.
But here's my question, and you've been in this room.
Yeah.
Now, and you notice my reading is nothing like this room. But there's a picture in this room of a riverbank or a stream and a forest area. And
yeah.
I cannot tell, are those people I see on the bank also?
Yeah, I think there's people in that landscape.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I thought that when you were doing your thing, it was kind of interesting that a lot of what you were writing was representational of the painting that was right next to the target object.
I know. That's just really funny, isn't it?
Yeah. You know, it's like, wow, okay. The other thing is, right before we were going to go on the air, you said that your second target, that you felt real hot about it. I think that was the word you said, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I thought that was kind of interesting, since that photo is taken in deep infrared. It was just your choice of words. I thought, well, okay, you know.
Well, I got a question. Is Jordan Springs actually near a river?
Jordan Springs has, well, actually, yes. It's part of one of the rivers actually cuts on part of the property. You know, Jordan Springs is like 238 acres. And right close to the hotel, there's a creek that goes right next to it that runs there.
Really? But, well, that's interesting. Yeah. I've got a square structure right next to the bank, if you'll look back at the picture.
Okay, let me refresh this. Well, I just got kicked out of the chat room.
That's okay.
I think that maybe Gregory cursed my mouse or something.
Oh, it's that. Well, that's that demonologist stuff for you. That's what that is.
Yeah, right. Okay, so. Yeah.
That's really interesting. I don't know. I mean, that's what I was seeing. I mean, literally on the piece of paper, I saw a ghost image of what I drew. I mean, that's what I came up with.
Okay. But the target was the lamp.
That's correct.
Target was the lamp.
Which that is not the target.
Okay. So do you think that anything threw you off because it was an infrared photo? Do you think that made any difference to you?
No, I don't think that's what it's. I think it's just a matter of practice.
Okay. Yeah, I was just curious. And the other thing is I was wondering if there'd be any difference since I personally took this photo, whether or not, since I assigned it a target value, whether or not that, again, was going to be something that would, you know, somehow increase, you know, your ability with it. See, I chose both, actually, and then the one that we ended up throwing out because, you know, inadvertently
What was the first picture since Catherine sat there and did that one?
That one was the front of a building that's being restored.
Okay.
So what did Catherine think that she had?
What did you have, Catherine? You type in the chat room. She will in a second. It was a building. It was the front of a building that they were remodeling.
And the target was the front door. Pyramids?
There were bricks.
No.
There were bricks.
No. Yeah. Rectangular building.
Yep. Wow.
Okay.
She said lots of people.
Can she qualify whether were they alive people or dead people?
Were they alive or dead, Catherine? She says she was way off. She says a lot of people having a good time.
Well, from a psychic standpoint, I would agree with her. The front of that building had huge residual energy. And I found out from the history, they used to have huge garden parties there with literally hundreds of people. This was a large plantation house in Maryland, and that location was the site of like these huge soirees and stuff. And when you were there, even though there was no living people, it really felt like you were being rather crowded. So, okay.
Sure. So, go ahead.
I was just going to say, for those of you that are interested, Michelle Bellinger, The Ghost Hunter Survival Guide.
Absolutely. Oh, yeah, we're moving the show to Sunday nights now, aren't we, at 10 o'clock Eastern time?
That's right. Did we lose our lease, or what's the deal here?
I think it actually had to do with what nights I have to work.
Okay.
Yeah, it's career hazards, I guess. But, we'll be moving.
I keep telling you, if you win the lottery and become independently wealthy, you don't have to do such mundane things as go to work.
Oh, no. If I become wealthy, I can tell you right now what I'll be doing.
Well,
and it won't be working.
Okay. So, all right. So, next week, do not come here on Monday night because we won't be here. We will be here next Sunday, the 15th, 10 o'clock.
We'll be talking about random stuff again, and probably have to come up with a different lineup. We're going to talk about demonologists next week, man?
No, we're not.
What about a Worms?
Well, I don't know. There's always time for a word or two about orbs. Talk about a word that's got power. You know what I'm saying?
There you
it's
go.
Like you say orb, and Doug's head explodes. You know? Doug says orbs don't exist, and thousands of ghost hunters everywhere, their heads explode. So it's a powerful word, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, it's funny, you know, I was talking with this Native American shaman, and he looks at me and he goes, "You're not one of those people that don't believe in orbs." And so I give him a resounding, "Well, it depends." And he goes, "Well, what do you mean?" I said, "Well, it kind of depends on what you mean by orb. You know, if what you're talking about is the thousands of little pieces of dust that are out on the internet that people are saying are energy orbs, no, I don't believe in those. On the other hand, if you're talking about a genuine ball of energy, yes, I do believe in them." And evidently that satisfied him. So,
well, you know, that speaks volumes to keeping things in context and understanding that everybody has a different sense of meaning for a word.
Yep.
You know, that, I think that's a lot of where the arguments come in between a lot of these different investigation groups. And they're so hung up on semantics instead of listening to actually what's being said. There's no common ground for anybody to have the terminology set to be able to have a rational discussion half the time. So, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, the other thing with him is I made sure that I was clarifying what we were talking about. So we didn't inadvertently have an argument about something we didn't mean to argue about.
Correct.
You know.
Right.
So.
Maybe that's something we ought to go into is next week would be the semantics and stuff of ghost investigations. And, you know, perhaps that's something that a lot of people need to take a strong, hard look at is define it for what it really is and not just an urban mythos, you know.
All right. You know what? We can talk about whatever you'd like next week.
Well, that's just a thought, you know.
No, I think that's a good idea. So let's do that. Listen, I want to invite everyone to join us Thursday night with Paranexus Universe. This week we have Science, Consciousness, and the Trickster with Bill Sweet. And that will be being hosted by the one and only
Mr. Doug Kelly and
Grant Rubenstant. So please join us on Thursday night at 9 p.m.
Yep, that'll be great. I think that'll be a good show, actually. And
yep.
is that not the guy that chimed in chat? He was really, really intellectual, and I really enjoyed listening to what he had to say.
All right, you know what time it is, Mike? It's time for us to cue the music, and thank everyone for being here tonight. And I hope you enjoyed the show, and please join us on Sunday night.
All right, man. Everybody, you have a good night, and we'll see you next Sunday.